Hi, I'm Jay Christian Adams, President of the Public Interest Legal Foundation. This is the Protecting Your Vote podcast. For more information, you go to publicinterestlegal.org. With us today is an esteemed guest here in the studio, John Malcolm, who is the Vice President at the Institute for Constitutional Government at the Heritage Foundation, also the Executive Director of the Mies Center.
Just Director, but that's fine.
Right, but thank you for joining us, John.
It's my pleasure. It's great to be here.
So glad to have you here. I am thrilled because you know more about what we're going to talk about than most people. So one of the things I want to mention that sometimes people say there's no such thing as voter fraud. You've heard that.
I have.
And not true, right?
Correct.
And if I were to try to find a way to prove that it's not true, one of the places I like to go, like you to talk about, is the Heritage Foundation as a voter fraud database.
That's right. And actually, it's interesting that you begin our discussion that way, because I was doing a debate several years ago at the National Constitution Center against a well-known liberal activist lawyer. And the topic of voter fraud came up. And this person said, your odds of finding voter fraud, someone who actually commits voter fraud, are about as high as seeing a unicorn. And I just said, that's
I hadn't heard that one.
It. I am, you know, I have had it. So I came back and said, we are going to establish an election fraud database. But I want it to be very careful. It's not meant to be comprehensive. The secret sauce is the way I discover these cases, for the most part, is I have a Google alert. Voter fraud. And if a case comes up, somebody's arrested for this, that, or the other, we track it. Now, the voter fraud, there are always allegations of voter fraud. Some candidate loses, the other person cheated, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I didn't want any of that in our database. Our database consists of adjudicated cases. So people who have been convicted of voter fraud, or where a judge overturned an election, or an administrative or civil finding that voter fraud occurred. And then we will document exactly what happened, and we will attach the court documents and reputable media publications that discuss the case. Again, it's just meant to be representative of the kinds of fraud that happen. We have in the database now over 1,600 cases.
1,600?
1,600. And, you know, it's interesting.
Wow.
Some people will sit there and say, well, 1,600, that's next to nothing. There are millions of people who vote. You know, that's an infinitesimally small number. And I'll sit there and say, you know, you can make that argument if you want to, or you can argue on the other side that because of all the vulnerabilities in our system, it's likely the tip of the iceberg. We've now at least gotten the left to no longer say that voter fraud doesn't exist. They now say
it's
rare.
Right.
And I consider that a bit of a win.
Yeah.
We're tracking several hundred cases. The Trump administration and various DAs are being more aggressive about pursuing.
Right. There's just an arrest, I think, in North Carolina last week, an indictment on non-citizen voting.
Yeah, there are several now that are popping up. I remember I once did a debate with some law professor who said, oh, you know, look, you have all of these entries in all of these red states, and there's almost none in all of these blue states, and that just goes to show that voter fraud is more of a problem in red states.
Yeah.
And I sat there and said, it says nothing of the sort. What that says to me is prosecutors in red states actually periodically look for voter fraud and pursue it. Prosecutors in blue states either don't care, or after the election they've moved on to other things. The fact that there are fewer entries just means that there are fewer adjudicated cases. It does not mean that the problem is less in blue states. Indeed, the fact that, you know, that they're not really looking shows that the problem is probably worse.
Yeah, Public Interest Legal Foundation did a report a couple years ago on Florida, and the Hillsborough County Supervisor of Elections said he won't even refer cases to the Hillsborough DA for prosecution because he's just against his nature. And the Hillsborough DA is a Soros DA. So we have this double whammy of no reporting, no prosecution. So I think you're onto something. John, I've seen the criticism that, oh, there's a billion votes and this is only. That's why the Public Interest Legal Foundation developed the Public Interest Legal Foundation Tied Election Database. And what we've done is sort of pivoting off the Heritage Database is catalog hundreds of elections that end in a tie.
Right. Oh, I've seen that database.
Where it's just like one vote makes all the difference. It really should be the Tied plus or minus one database, but one vote makes a difference. The control of the Virginia House was decided by a coin flip a couple years ago. You might remember.
Well, I do remember that. And, of course, a presidential election was decided by about 500 votes in Florida, you know, in November of 2000. But, you know, now there are a lot of young people who have no memory of that.
Right.
They want to now move the voting age from 18 down to 16, which is what they're doing in London, which is just insane.
Interesting. So where can people find the Heritage Foundation database?
Oh, they can just go to Google and type in Heritage election fraud or voter fraud database, and they will get it. And it has an interactive map. You can go to every state. You can search by state. You can search by voter fraud type and read examples of people who have, fortunately, didn't get away with it. And it will serve as a lesson that people ought to shore up their laws so that fewer people have the opportunity to commit voter fraud in the first place.
And if you're tempted to think that that database doesn't mean anything, then you can Google Public Interest Legal Foundation Tied Election Database.
That's right.
All right.
Actually, one other thing before the election fraud database, which is we once had the Columbia School of Journalism decided that they were going to put about 19 reporters to scrutinize our database and look for errors. And I'm proud to say that they didn't, with one exception, which is they contacted me and said, you have one entry that actually has five people listed. It's not an individual entry. It's got five people. I said congratulations. You have discovered that there are actually four more cases of voter fraud that we did not break out.
Right.
But they tried desperately to find any errors in that database.
You know, that could open up a whole other podcast topic one day, is why would the Columbia School of Journalism unleash all of the resources to try to do that? But that will take us down a wild road of things like PolitiFact and all the other debunking exercises go out there. Let's shift now to another project at Heritage that I think is terrific. I actually helped with, I don't know if you remember.
You did, of course.
The scorecard.
Yes.
And the scorecard grades every state's laws as to whether or not they're as good as they could be, the state statutes for election administration. What else? Is that a pretty good assessment?
Yeah, plus the District of Columbia. So we do it for every area that has an electoral college vote. So
I
all
see.
50 states plus the district. And we put together a group of advisors whom we respect. You were one of them. And we bandied about the criteria for this extensively. It's a 0 to 100 score. There are 50, I think, different criteria that we use. It's all laid out exactly what those criteria are, exactly what our methodology is. People can look at that, decide whether they agree with it or disagree with it. And then we rank all of the states based on their laws and regulations. Obviously, if they have a law that's been struck down by a court, we will not give them credit for that until the court reverses itself. And we look every month at what different states have done, laws that they've passed, to see whether there should be changes to the rankings. And there has been changes over time. I'm happy to say that this is a bit of a virtuous circle. There are a number of states that have contacted us and said, how can we improve our score? Part of the database, we have some model legislation. Legislators have sometimes contacted us and said, this is great. And they've actually kind of cut and pasted our model bills and introduced them in their state legislatures. But we will chronicle the ups and downs, and people can look and see. So Tennessee, I believe at the moment, is tied for number one, and they have T-shirts and backpacks bragging about the fact that they're number one in our score.
Really?
Yeah,
that's great. So we have a report at PILF called From Worst to First about Florida, about getting election results in on election night, and we're not focused on all the criteria of the database. Do you know how Florida ranks overall generally?
Highly. It's I forget. It's got to be somewhere in the top five. But I forget. I could look it up easily enough, but I don't know. But it's up there.
Worse.
And one other thing. We are, again, chronicling the laws and regulations. I hasten to add that, a law is only as good as as the people who enforce it. We've had some people come back and say, there's voter fraud here, and you give it a high ranking. How can that be? Well, their laws are pretty good. You still need to be able to hold public officials accountable for enforcing those laws.
Right. Bad states. Can I just guess? I have not memorized the rankings, but Minnesota, Hawaii.
Hawaii is way down
there.
I haven't looked at Minnesota, but yes. Hawaii, I remember being way down
there. Real quick story. So the Public Interest Legal Foundation has arguments in Hawaii in the Ninth Circuit on transparency for the voter rolls. And we asked under the National Voter Registration Act for the statewide voter list, which we won in the First Circuit. We win this, all over. And Hawaii's state election official said, I'm not going to give you the document I have. You need to go fetch it from the counties, you know, away with you, you know, out of my hair. And when we didn't fetch it from the counties, because we don't have to under federal law.
Right.
If you have it, we get it.
Right.
We sued, and a district court judge actually said, yeah, you got to go fetch it from the counties. That's why you're in the Ninth Circuit.
Well, you know, I remember, well, I forget which court it was, basically deprived some citizens of, I think it was their Second Amendment rights, saying that it violated the spirit of Aloha.
No, it didn't. No, really?
Yes, it did.
Come on.
Really, it violated the spirit of Aloha. My colleague Amy Swearer wrote about that. It's like, you know, wacky stuff, hang loose. You know, wacky stuff just happens down
there. Right. So, but generally you think the situation in judicial decisions has gotten much better and different than 20 years ago, I assume.
Yes, I think that that is right. Certainly in terms of voter integrity laws, people are focusing on it a lot more.
Right.
And in large part because of things like the election fraud database and your database in terms of showing tight elections. I mean, look, there are a number of elections where, I mean, it's just terrible that people try to cheat. Anyway, and by the way, it's a bipartisan thing. Winning elections leads to a lot of power, and so there are incentives to cheat sort of all around. If you can't win, you know, if you can't join them, beat them, you know, by cheating. But you know, there are a lot of very, very close elections, and they make a huge difference in terms of who's going to be making laws and enforcing those laws. And basically, you know, people don't feel comfortable casting their ballot, thinking going to be diluted or negated by a fraudster. They're going to lose faith in the system. They're not going to bother.
So we're on with John Malcolm, who is the executive director of the Meese Center at the Heritage Foundation on protecting your vote. John, Heritage has been in this game for a long time, this niche area of election process, election integrity. Frankly, I'll go out on a limb. I think Heritage was the first in the game, if I'm not mistaken. This goes back almost 20 years. I know when I, before PILF, I wrote a piece at the Heritage, is it Legal Memo?
Yeah, I wrote a Legal Memo.
About the National Voter Registration Act, probably in 2013 or 2014. Hans is chairman of the PILF board, right? You guys have been on this a very long time.
Yeah, well, Hans and I go back literally over half of our lifetimes. We were very, very good friends in Atlanta, Georgia when we lived there. Hans was the chairman of the Fulton County Republican Party, and I was one of his vice chairs. He asked me to be, and he was all over election law then. When I got a job in the Bush administration as a political appointee, the Department of Justice, I actually reached out to the guy who was going to be the head of the Civil Rights Division. And said, if you want somebody who is, you know, has great integrity and knows election laws, Hans von Spakovsky is your guy. And I'm very, very pleased that Hans got a position in the Civil Rights Division, and then, you know, he went on to become a federal election commissioner. He was at Heritage before I was there. He's certainly been all over this issue. I've been there now for nearly 14 years, and certainly as long as I have been there, we have been that it's been a priority
area for us. And it seems to remain so, which is good. But the importance of experience and getting it right in this space is essential, right?
Yes.
And I would submit that some courts are becoming more jaded about these issues after what happened in 2020. That makes it difficult when you do have it right, like when you get the case right and you have to kind of have that headwind against you. But Heritage has been doing this in the election integrity space when nobody else was for a long time, actually. Like literally nobody.
No, I think that's right. And that's why I was saying, for example, how proud I am about the fact that the Columbia Journalism School looked at all of this and they couldn't find any errors. You will lose credibility very quickly if you are sloppy with your facts.
Right.
And in this space in particular, particularly when people are going up, it's a hoax, the other, and, you know, the big lie. It's like, you know, we'll give you facts. We can then have a robust dispute about what those facts mean, but we'll give you facts. And if we're going to use some subjective factors to rank states, or they're not subjective factors, they are objective factors, they're what we think you need to look at in order to evaluate states, we will be transparent about it. You can look at it, you can decide for yourself, you can argue about whether those are the right factors or the wrong factors, but we're going to be upfront about what it is that we're doing.
Right. Well, listen, John, it has been a pleasure to have you on. Delightful to darken our doorstep down here at the actual studio. I've been at the Heritage Studio, which is also very nice, brand new.
I'm happy to return the favor.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's just keep going back and forth. So thanks for your time. Where can people learn more about what your work is?
oh, they can go to heritage.org and put in my name, John Malcolm, M-A-L-C-O-L-M. I suppose that they can follow me on Twitter at Malcolm underscore John. Or they can, you know, they want to talk to me about something. I'm generally approachable. They can just send an email to Heritage. It'll find me.
Great. Terrific. Thanks for joining us. I'm J. Christian Adams. This has been Protecting Your Vote. Don't forget, down below, if you do this or that, like, dislike, and subscribe. For more information, go to publicinterestlegal.org. Until next time, it's Protecting Your Vote.